Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. Today's topic, launching a startup during a pandemic, which I think is probably pretty important to a lot of entrepreneurs out there right now. I am Lauren Conaway, your host. I'm founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC, and I would be remiss if I did not remind you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably, and doing a whole bunch of other cool stuff. We love ourselves some Fullscale. So today's show, this is another one of our top Chicago startups, and I love talking to our top startups across the country. It's been a really, really fun experience getting to know some of these groundbreaking, disruptive companies that are doing really, really amazing stuff in cities across the nation. But today we have a very cool guest. We have with us Kim Michelson, and she is co-founder and CEO of Honest Game. And so we're going to be talking about data and sports and, you know, achievement and academics and like all kinds of cool stuff. But Kim, I just want to kick off the show by saying, first of all, thank you so much for being here.
Oh God, Lauren, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us, like I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in. And I would love it if you could explain Honest Game for our listeners. I know what you do. I think mostly, but our listeners want to hear from you. What is Honest Game?
Sure. Thanks, Lauren. How I like to describe Honest Game is really in three ways: the what, the how, and the why. So from a what standpoint, we're the first SaaS sort of technology platform that automates academic eligibility, NCAA and NAIA, to college sports. That's our what. And we use verified data through transcripts and test scores to do that so people can trust it. Our how, I just sort of shared that as well with you, which is we do it through our tool, through our platform, our technology platform. But our why is to me more exciting, and it's really about changing the world. So, you know, our why is kind of about, and why we get up in the morning is about leveling the playing field so we can drive equity in sport and college access for all student athletes.
That is awesome. I love that. So let me ask you this. In the past, how has that equity in sports been a challenge?
Yeah, similar to getting an accountant to do complicated taxes, the majority of people in the country, frankly, the world, don't understand the complicated rules. We like to call it a multi-tiered matrix of test scores, a special NCAA core GPA, and your GPA. And in order to even access college sports, you need to meet these requirements. And because most people don't understand them, they're flying blind. So just a few stats for you. Just in the US alone, 1 million kids a year are unable to accept college scholarships because they're academically ineligible. In any kind of urban community, the stats are much more dire. It's 1 in 2 student athletes that are unable to go to college. And so really it's less about you must go to college and more about clearing the way to drive equity and access for all.
That's amazing. And that's such important work. So tell me this, what's your stake in Honest Game? How did you come to Honest Game? Come up with the idea, develop it. What brought Kim into this space?
Well, thanks for asking that. We probably all have a story. I'm sure we do. Sport was a really big driver in my life. Grew up in California, and we didn't have any girls teams at the time, well, girls basketball teams. And so because of Title IX, I benefited. I tried out and made the boys varsity basketball and baseball team. So I was the first female in California to do that. And I think, you know, we use that as a microcosm for like other things, but things I learned on the court about grit, about determination, about learning how to be a graceful loser, all those things apply to life and to business. And so that was sort of how I sort of got into sport. But how this idea came to fruition was really that I was running as an executive director, a nonprofit for under-resourced student athletes. Mm-hmm. And we had to raise a lot of money, which was, in my opinion, somewhat inefficient. Because if you scaled it with technology, you could help more people for less money. But the basic idea was that you just start seeing patterns. And one pattern is that the NCAA does the best job that they can. They're a clearinghouse, but there's no guide to get there. So we're the guide, the yellow brick road. And the idea came to me because, frankly, it was kind of a shame that nobody had ever created this. And its impact was so dire on and so potentially transformational for so many people's lives.
Yeah. And just, I'm sure you have the stats on this, but how many students would you say have been positively impacted by Honest Game since you founded?
So here's the great news. The great news is that we launched in February of 2020. And so we've just hit a year. And in that year, we have 25,000 users on our platform.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you. So it's been super positive. And year over year too, Lauren, we're really going to be able to sort of see how it impacts student learning outcomes. How many more kids are going to college, doesn't matter what level, D1, D2, NAIA, but having opportunities. So I think year over year, the stats are going to be even more compelling.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is absolutely amazing. Well, so talk to me about this, because I'm just super intrigued. I don't think, you said that you launched in February of 2020. I don't think there's a person out there who says to themselves, hey, you know, we're in the middle of a global pandemic and an economic downturn. This would be a great time to start a company. So tell us about the kind of process that led you there.
Yeah, it's a great question. And for anybody out there that's, you know, has done the same, I tremendous respect and awe of all of you. So we started this business the idea of the business started in January of 2019. So about a year before the pandemic. We actually didn't launch our technology, hire an engineer till February of 2020. So we were trying to figure out, this is a great idea, but is it actually a business? And then we applied in that same time frame, I think January of 2020, to the Chicago Bulls venture competition. And we beat out 200 companies and we got our first venture capital money. So we thought, this is very real now. And the one thing I can say to anybody who's running a business during COVID is that if you can survive and even thrive during these times, you're going to do great when it's back to normal.
Yeah, and, absolutely. Yeah. You've definitely had the opportunity to kind of test your mettle for sure. So just curiosity, how much have you raised at this point?
Yeah. So we've raised, initially in that first year, we raised about 400,000 to friends and family, but actually we just 2 weeks ago sort of initiated another raise. And so we're raising 2 million. And actually I'm excited about the position because we started this raise 2 weeks ago and we already have basically have soft circles already committed for that amount. Yeah. So now we can be picky, which is great.
That is awesome. Well, and so you mentioned that, you know, you had this idea and that it actually took you a minute to hire tech. And I'm really curious about the tech aspect. So talk to us about that process. Like, how did you identify someone or a team of someone's who could help you build this out? What kind of criteria did you have in your head when you were bringing this technology to fruition, getting it ready to go to market?
Sure. So we hired an engineer, just somebody sort of on the side, to build out our tech. Because my business partner, who is very knowledgeable, worked at a high school, sat on only part of 10 people that sat on the NCAA high school board, really truly is an eligibility expert. She was doing a lot of it by hand right away. And I was out selling, just saying, you know, and she'd say, well, we're not really quite ready to sell. I said, we're going to figure it out. We're going to sell. And so when we hired this engineer, it really was great because we actually, it was low cost and it was our, you know, minimum viable product and it was excellent. And how the tech works, which I love, is that we're not dealing with anything subjective. We're dealing with everything objective. These are rules and regulations. And we basically have just took all of those complicated rules and put them into a easily digestible tech platform that everyone can be an academic eligibility expert and follow their path. So we basically just decoded that for them. So, and I love that about sports because there's so much that is subjective in sport. Are you good enough? Does my coach believe in me? Am I getting enough playing time? Why can he or she tell me I can't play that position? So I love that this is just what I call an unemotional tool. It's just data.
Yeah. Well, but it's you're allowing students and coaches and, you know, all of these very invested stakeholders to access that data in a very, very real, easily digestible kind of way, which I love. Because I think when people talk about data, like, they tend to get a little intimidated, but you're making it very easy to access, which I love. So for my next question, like, where I have like a question pipeline here.
Sure.
That I've kind of been working on as you've been talking. So talk to us about the user experience. You have different kinds of users who are interfacing with the data that you're providing. So why don't we start with students? What does their experience with Honest Game look like?
Yeah. So their experience is, we try to do is, the majority of kids, and we deal with high school kids, eighth grade and up, mm-hmm. are not thinking about academics. It's not the most sexy thing to think about. They're thinking about sports, maybe new shoes, maybe whatever else. And they're looking at TikTok and whatever they care about. So what we try to do is put the student in the center of what we call that student's village. And everybody around that student, from the parent to the coach, to the potential the club coach, to the counselor, all having this data so that the student is going to be surrounded by people that care about him or her and mm-hmm. going to make sure that student stays on track.
And well, and that speaks to the impact piece. You know, you mentioned that your co-founder is an expert in this arena, and you yourself are an expert because you've both had personal experience as well as, you know, the knowledge that you got when you worked for that nonprofit. So talk to us a little bit about that. Like, how did you, we have the tech side, but then we have the impact side. So for that student, how did you know what kind of questions to ask, what kind of data would be most useful to create real actionable change in these students' lives?
Yeah, so I love that question. Let me hit the impact stuff first. The impact stuff was really non-negotiable for us. We are a public benefit corp, which is really no different than a C corp. I mean, it's just like any startup, but we kind of are alerting anybody who invests in us or is involved with us that we're doing well by doing good. And in our real belief on the world is that, I always say this all the time, that, you know, corporate social responsibility is fine, but all that stuff came out of covering your reputation. What we believe is more of a shared value model, which is that impact is really at the center of what we do, and its tentacles go out to everything. And that not only can you do well by doing good, but probably you'll do better profitably by really, really sticking to and honoring in an authentic way your mission.
Yeah.
So that's the first piece. And then the second piece I would say is, you know, we do know the space really well. We are experts. But at the same time, we continually do tons of customer discovery because we're very open into what don't we know and how can we get better.
So what methods have you been using to interface with your customers and kind of figure out what the pain points, what the needs, and what the tactics are?
Yeah. So for example, we started really with high schools, and we realized that the value prop was really great for them because every high school in the country has a different list of NCAA core courses. And there are some high schools that don't have any core courses. So student athletes are there having no idea that unless these courses are fixed, they'll never be able to play at an NCAA member institution. So it's a pretty big deal. So we started with that model, and then we realized they really do get our value prop, but they move slow. So we moved to the club market, and the club market was like, yeah, we're helping so many kids get recruited. This is a tool that, you know, college coaches must know. Are you academically eligible and admissible? And if I recruit you, can you play day one? So they started paying right away. But the interaction is different because we get the data directly from the learning management system at the high school. It's a push of a button. If you imagine with a club team, we have maybe 30 different high schools on a particular team. So we've got to work with them. So what we're learning about the club sector, that's very large and very fragmented, is that we have to be more mobile friendly. And that's kind of one of our key learnings. Like, should we interact on Twitter and single sign-on? And so we've integrated some other tools, like some soft phone apps and stuff, to be able to text and be able to communicate a little bit more the way they communicate.
Sure. That's awesome. So we've kind of talked about, we've talked about the student experience of Honest Game. What about those schools and those clubs and like these entities that are hoping to help these students stay academically eligible, hoping to help get them recruited? Like, what does that look like?
Sure. So on the high school side, it's an interesting, there's lots of people on the high school side we deal with, from like the head of instructional curriculum, who wants to make sure that the core courses look right and that they're named right and that they align with the NCAA portal. But then there's also coaches, athletic directors, and counselors. And we try to put, imagine in a school system, there's a lot of silos. We try to make sure that our tool is touching all of them and connecting all of them. So that's how that operates. And then on the club side, they've been a really good customer. I think one thing that I think we bring to the table, I mean, our name is Honest Game, is that the sector is somewhat predatory. It can be predatory, in my opinion. So making sure people will offer you, say, I can help you and I can help you, but can they really help you?
Yeah.
And so a tool like Honest Game really builds credibility in the face of like parents are like, yes, they really know what they're doing. They're not just there for the sports side, but they can help our children sort of in a more holistic way.
Yeah. I love that. And I almost feel like, was that an unintended side effect? I mean, like, clearly you have a very, very directed, clear purpose and mission. Like, did you anticipate that as being one of the benefits?
The transparency part?
The credibility. Shared shine.
Yeah. I think that it's a really interesting thing. And I don't want to get off too much, but I think one of the reasons that Honest Game is successful is because if we just look, get away from sport and just look at the world right now, going back to the Lori Loughlin scandal, maybe that wasn't her, but that whole scandal that happened and the public said, oh my God, like this is happening and people are buying their way into this and this seems so inequitable. Then you had the Me Too movement and people said, well, I'm kind of done with this. And then you had the Black Lives Matter movement. Then you had COVID and you take COVID where test scores were taken away and you saw the people that were inordinately affected were lower socioeconomic folks. And so I think, in my opinion, it's sort of a big, oh, and then you turn on the news and it's like, can I trust this? Is this fake news? Is this real news? And I think this sort of pattern that we're seeing, in my opinion, drives to why our data is so valuable and credible, because it's just data and it has data people can trust. And I think that the public is saying, not I want transparency anymore, but I'm demanding it.
Yeah. That's absolutely amazing. I don't know. I guess I had never really thought of it. So one of our previous guests, Denise Hamilton, she used this term, democratizing access. And I was like, I'm going to use that and I'm going to credit you. But like, I love that you are finding a way to do that, because to be like, I don't think it's any secret that for some of these students, particularly from, you know, marginalized communities and depressed socioeconomic areas, like sports eligibility and like that academic eligibility, like this is game changing stuff for them. Like this can change, like, you know, being able to go to college and get scholarships and join some of these programs, like this will change the trajectory of their life. And so I just love that you're doing this work and you're viewing it from such an impact-based standpoint. That's super cool. So I have one more viewpoint or one more, I guess, sure, active point that I want to talk about, which is like the coaches and the those kinds of stakeholders. You know, what is their experience with Honest Game like?
I think they're really grateful, because one thing we see in the sector as well is that, you know, we ask people to do a lot of things. So yeah, coaches often are the closest people to some of the students we work with, and they have interest from colleges and this and that. They have to coach. And one coach recently said to me, I don't even have time to coach anymore, because I'm trying to do academic eligibility on a napkin, or trying to get help this kid, or trying to connect him. And so I think it allows these coaches a peace of mind to know that they can do what they want to do. And somebody else has this, somebody they can rely on Honest Game to sort of take care of the academic side.
Yeah. Well, and I think I do need to mention, you know, if you listeners, our dear friends and listeners, if you are looking to create some efficiencies and make it easier to build a software team, you know, definitely look at Fullscale.io. They can help you do that, help you build apps and technologies and help you do it affordably and efficiently. And they just do incredible work. So we love our episode sponsor, Fullscale. So let me ask you this, and this is a very selfish question on my part. Yeah. But I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned that you have a co-founder and that you are both women, presumably. So talk to me a little bit about that experience. Like, you are actually operating in a pretty, I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but a pretty male-dominated space. And so I'm really interested to hear about your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I love that question. We're both females, as you said, and you are right. Both in sport and tech, we're really, women are underrepresented.
Yeah.
So I think it makes us closer to our mission, because recently we had a call, it was a little while ago, with a large organization, no names to be mentioned. And they said to us, but I think they meant it, I mean, they might've meant it as a compliment. They said, you both are so confident, you're bordering on cocky. And both Joyce and my business partner and I looked at each other, we were on Zoom at the time, but we just said, would they say that to a man?
Yeah.
And we felt like they wouldn't. And so we try not to be too sensitive about these things. We just know that we're going to run into that. And not everybody is going to be as evolved and open to this. And so, but we thought, we've been in a couple of situations where we thought, that was an interesting turn of phrase.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's, what is it? Women secure 2% of venture capital funding. And here you are doing a raise. Have you come across any kind of resistance or any issues as you're looking to secure funds?
We've been really lucky. We didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know. And 2 weeks in, we've basically have commitments for the entire $2 million we wanted to raise on this round. And so we're kind of lucky. I don't know if that there's just, and you might have a better lens on this, Lauren, I don't know if there's just a lot of money out there or people are really resonating with what we're doing, but I think that allows us to be picky and say, well, we're going to interview our investors like they're interviewing us.
Yeah.
And money's, I always say this all the time, not all money's the same.
Sure.
So what are, you know, the money is less, not that it's less hard to come by. I think that it's can be hard for some folks to raise, but it's more about how are we going to work together and how are you going to contribute to this relationship? So I think it's been kind of a fun process to be able to say, do they understand sports? Do they understand ed tech? What's their experience and who are their connections? And so it's been fun to be able to be a bit choosier.
Yeah. So I feel like we've kind of established a really good baseline, and I love the narrative that you have crafted thus far, but now let's get to the meat and potatoes of the thing. And I really want to talk about this pandemic. because I am blown away. It's really interesting. Actually, so there are so many who would say that it is not, that a pandemic isn't a great time to start a business. But in fact, the statistics show that you see more entrepreneurs activate in times of economic distress. And it's, there's a correlation to entrepreneurs who, you know, have been laid off or have been, you know, forced to kind of pivot, who are now in a position like, all right, well, if I don't have a job, I might as well start my own thing. So it's really interesting when you see these numbers jump up in new business. And I'm not saying that that's what happened with Honest Game, but I've just always been kind of fascinated by that. You see entrepreneurs starting businesses right at the times when people are like, don't start businesses. It's the wrong time. I just find that fascinating. But tell us, talk to us about the tactics and like some of the ways that you've had to actually overcome this global phenomenon that we are dealing with, and then all of the associated issues, you know, economic distress, you know, civil unrest. Like there's just so much happening in the world. And I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on how Honest Game has been able to navigate that.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. And I'm fascinated by the whole idea of new enterprise starting during, you know, times of, you know, civil unrest and economic downturns. For us, it was even potentially on paper more extreme because school was shut down and sports were shut down.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we do. So I think like, you know, but here's the great part. And I think, well, there's two points I want to mention. Number one is eligibility was still a thing. Mm-hmm. And if any way, in a lot of ways, it was more important now. And that's because the NCAA and NAIA kept changing their requirements, dropping test scores, extending the debt period, all of these things. And kids were home and remote learning. And we saw kids getting disengaged and depressed. And in some ways, this is a tool that kind of also kind of, if you have short-term goals, it affects your sort of emotional psyche. And also make sure that kids feel like, even though I'm at home and I don't know what the world's going to look like and this feels crazy, there's someone that has me, that has my back.
Yeah.
So that was one part of it. I think the other part is that, and I don't know if it's because we're athletes, but like, it's kind of those tenets I told you before. Like, I always say to Joyce all the time, this customer may have said no, but they'll work with us. They just don't know yet. They just don't know it yet. And so right. I think it's this idea of grit. Like, we kind of just keep going and keep going. And so I think, you know, I think that there's so much creativity and new opportunities that arise in times of real difficulty in our country.
Yeah. Well, so let's turn that outward. Like you've mentioned a couple of tenets that have helped you navigate these choppy waters, like grit, you know, keep going, things like that. But if you were to give, well, I'm going to put you on the spot. Sorry.
Sure.
But if you were to give one piece of advice to our listeners at home who are either thinking about starting a business, you know, or in the kind of nascent stages of starting a business right now at this moment in time, what would you tell them? Like, what has been the most impactful piece for you? And what would you like to pass on?
I'd say the most impactful thing is kind of what I started with. Know your why.
Yeah.
People do a lot of things. You know, what do you do? And then you can explain how you do it. I would say that a lot of people don't know your why. And until you know your why, I don't know that I'd advocate for that, because I think that's what gets you up in the morning when things are bad, when you don't feel well, when you have a cold, when you've been turned down by a customer, but you get up and your team gets up and they're rooting for something bigger than themselves. So right. I think that it's always about, before you do anything, know your why.
Yeah. Well, and so that is amazing advice. And I think there's is it Simon Sinek who has the Start With Why book?
Well, I love him. I love him.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. Like there's that whole TED talk with like the circles and I love him. Well, so let's talk a little bit about your why. And I'm going to ask you, do you have, so you're a very data driven organization, of course. And clearly like you have a deep understanding of data and how it influences your business. But let's talk a little bit about that qualitative piece. Do you have any stories or do you have any like anecdotes that you could share with us, like successes for the students that you serve? Like when you're talking to stakeholders and you want to share like, this is our why, what story do you tell? Do you have any?
Yeah, I have two stories. I'll tell you one that is a little sad and then I'll tell you the one that's positive. The one that's sad is a student athlete we worked with. It was after we launched our tech originally, and I got connected to him, and he was a football player, had offers from, he was now 7 years out. I mean, he was 7 years, you know, older, like this was about 7 to 10 years earlier, but that he had these opportunities. But we met with him and I said, listen, you were recommended by so-and-so, and I would love to show you our tech. And I know that you experienced this and you really understand the space. So, you know, tell me what you think. And I started going through the technology with him, and his eyes got really big. His name is Leo, and his eyes got really big. And he said, where were you 7 years ago?
Yeah.
And so the idea was that his life would have been different. He would have been the first in his family to go to college. And when you talk about impact, Lauren, we're talking about changing an individual's life, which ripples down to the community, which ripples down, you know, excuse me, ripples down to the family, which ripples down to the community. Like we're talking about massive sort of transformation. And so that was the sad story. And it was our kind of, again, why we do what we do.
Right. So you never again have a Leo who falls through the cracks. Because to your point, like, you know, not only are you affecting the student, but you're giving him the opportunity to build intergenerational wealth and, you know, achievement, which then trickles down to his family and then his family's family and the generations that come beyond, and the, you know, the money that he puts back into his community just by purchasing like services from the businesses around him. And I mean, it's just it's like this domino effect that you are creating. And the very epicenter is that student athlete whose life you changed. That's amazing.
I have the chills right now because you get it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you said intergenerational change, it's social mobility.
Right.
It's that college isn't for everyone. However, if you look at the stats, we want every student to have equal access to it, because college in America is growing at a rate of 8 times the average wage.
Yeah.
And we know that if kids go to college, and there are about $3 billion in athletic scholarships out there, and we know if kids go to college, over the average span of a lifetime, they will earn $1 million more. So it's not that they have to do that, but we talk about real transformation in communities and in families. And this stuff matters.
Right. Yeah, it absolutely does. So you said that you had two stories, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. Like Leo, that's a sad story. That's a cautionary tale. And I love that you've been able to turn that history into action. Like Leo happened, and that is a sad thing, but let's never allow that to happen again. Right. So tell us the good.
So the good is Naquan.
Okay.
So Naquan, grew up in a family, had incredible athletic talent, athletic talent, but had some opportunities on the academic side. And we worked with him. And again, like I said, unfortunately, the way the system is set up, it's a catch-up game. So the idea of, you know, catch-up is that you're already behind. And so he was catching up, had to take all of these classes and all of these classes. And without sort of the teamwork of like an Honest Game and his counselors and his coaches and everybody in Naquan's village, he wouldn't have been able to go to college. Now he went to Michigan State and he's being drafted in the NFL. So, and I remember going to his game. He plays for Michigan State. And he played Northwestern, and he's from Evanston, right where Northwestern is. And I sat in the stands and I cried, because if it wasn't for the entire village around Naquan, an Honest Game in the entire village, what would have happened is he might've been sitting in his apartment watching this game on TV. And now he has all of these opportunities in the world. So, and again, it's not just about the NFL, but that's a great story of an amazing child, an amazing family, who just this being proactive is going to change his life.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, you have the aspirational stories. Like not all of these students are going to get drafted into the NFL. And I think that, you know, we get that, but it is nice to see. And again, like you change the trajectory of this young gentleman's life. So talk to me about this. Like when you are talking to the students that you serve, do they have I'm trying to figure out how to like phrase this. It popped in my head half formed. So here it comes. So when you're working with students, like do they have an understanding or a grasp that they are actually the stewards of their own achievement? Like you're not helping them perform better academically. You're not, you know, but what you're doing is you're handing them a tool. And so when you have these students, like, do they have an understanding of the power of what you're handing them?
You know, that's a work in progress. We're a new product in a new market. Nobody does this. So we have to do a lot of educating and informing. And you as well know, Lauren, like, you know, the expression, you can drive a horse to water, you can't make them drink.
Right.
But we can provide a tool that hopefully that's why we provide it to everyone in that student's village, that somebody's saying, you know, okay, maybe mom's out, or maybe the student lives with a grandma, but somebody's pulling that student aside saying, your grades are power. Even if it's not even if it's just you get more merit money for college, you know, there's power even in just the scholarships. And so to take agency over the process. And I think it's as a new product in a new market, we're asking people to do something different. We're asking people to say, focus on the student and student athlete. It's going to be ongoing communication.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely amazing. And so now I'm going to shift gears a little bit because I've been wanting to talk to you about this. But when we talk about congratulations, by the way, I don't know if I said
thank you. Thank you.
Chosen as a top Chicago startup. You know, I think I may have mentioned before we started, like when we did the top Chicago startups episode, like I always love talking about companies, but yours was one that I actually got really excited about. And I think, you know, I was a student athlete, like when I was much younger, not like competitive in any sense. Like, you know, I could just, you know, play a little bit of softball, but that being said, like what I loved about your value proposition was that equity piece, that access piece. I just think that that's so cool. So congratulations on being named a top Chicago startup. My question to you is talk to us a little bit about Chicago and kind of the landscape that you're operating within. I'm just really curious, you know, have you found, when we do these top startup episodes, we identify communities that seem to have really strong entrepreneurial ecosystems. And so talk to us a little bit about how maybe Chicago has kind of informed your experience and what it's like to operate as an entrepreneur, tech, ed tech, startup in that space.
Well, you know, this is our city. We love it. And it's pretty evident, you know, when we started this, we weren't entrepreneurs. So for other entrepreneurs out there, like we didn't really know what we didn't know. And so there's a tech center in Chicago called 1871. And it's really the tech hub. Do you know it?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. So we joined the first accelerator there. That was what we did to kind of really just get this boot camp in startup and sort of building a financial model and what is cost of acquisition and what's lifetime value and how do we make sense of this? And, you know, do we really have product market fit? And we joined their Women in STEM accelerator. And it was incredibly powerful. So I give all the folks, I give all the folks at 1871, Betsy Ziegler and Rachel Freeborn, like incredible. Like we owe it to them because we feel like our baby was born there.
Yeah. That is awesome. I actually didn't know that they have a women in STEM accelerator. So now I'm going to have to reach out and be like, hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Yes. they're amazing. And I think you can see that a lot of our first traction was high schools and club teams in our city. And then now we're in all these cities, even doing international, but it was super, like, we are like, you know, the idea of like, we wanted to take care of our own.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, so I'm going to piggyback on that question. And this isn't necessarily like Chicago related, but who else has informed you on your journey and supported you? I'm just curious.
Right. You mean people that I know or just.
Do you have mentors? Do you have like people or organizations who've influenced what you've done and where you're going?
Yeah. We have a really, it's a great question. We have a really strong advisory council.
Yeah.
So we had won the Chicago Bulls venture competition. So Thaddeus Young, who plays for the Bulls, is one of our advisors. He really gets it. We're really proud of our advisory council, not just because of the knowledge, but because of the diversity on it. We have Gene Cross from the Sacramento Kings. He was with the Sacramento Kings. Now he's with the New York Knicks. He does amateur scouting with them. We have Tyree Burks, who created a company called Players Health. We have Dory McHorter, the CEO of the YWCA. We have Amy, Amy Hutchausen, who actually is the first female commissioner. She runs the America East. So we feel like we have these really good advisors that like are just there to say, we are rooting for you. And we're all building, we're all together collectively building something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, that is absolutely awesome. And I don't think there's anybody listening at home or myself included that doesn't understand that often your success comes because of the people you surround yourself with. And obviously you've done just an amazing job putting together a team of subject matter experts who believe in what you're doing. You know, that's the key for me. Like, you have to understand why. Everybody has to understand the why. So that's really, really cool, Kim.
Thank you, Lauren.
All right. So I'm going to ask, I've got two more questions. One of them is the human question, but the next question that I have, we're actually going to go over time because I'm just so interested by this.
I love it. Yeah.
So the question is, what's next for Honest Game? Like, I know, we know where you're at now. We know where you started, but you know, when you look out further, what do you see happening?
Oh, it's from the company standpoint.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we want to be very deliberate about everything that we do. So we're going to do this raise, bring our tech in house, bring on, we kind of have a try it before you buy it for employee model. So we kind of, people kind of work with us and get to know us before, because we want to make sure that the fit is right. And our culture is, keep maintaining that culture is critical to us. So I think we're going to keep on that. I think after we sort of crush eligibility, we're going to move into admissibility, which is more about, you know, you want to go to Dartmouth, you want to go to Stanford, you want to go to this D3 school. How many APs do you need? And really, again, give the path to those students. And then after those student athletes, we'll probably move into the general population of students.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. I can't wait. I can't wait to see that. I'm like sitting here. I'm like, ooh, what are the practical applications of that?
Love it.
So now you've started me plotting. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep talking.
All right. So here we have come to the time in our conversation where I'm going to ask you the human question, and it's going to be a little bit of, please excuse the pun, it's going to be a little bit of a softball. What sports do you like to watch, or what sports do you play? Like, how do sports influence you right now, Kim Michelson?
Yeah, this is going to be an unusual thing. I still play on a girls' basketball team, even though I'm this month I'm going to be 50. So I play on a I know, it's a big birthday. Thank you. I try to stay active. So I play on a girls' basketball team, which is fun because it keeps me, although my hips are starting to feel it. I grew up in LA, so I'm still like an LA fan, even though I love the Bulls now too. So the Lakers and the Bulls. But I think that sport to me, I love sport, but to me, sport, it's fun to watch, but I'm less impacted on this play and that play and more about what it does for people, the access that it opens up. And I feel that way about theater. I feel that way about dance. I feel that way about whatever. I think if you can find your why, it's really about how it opens pathways and less about the actual thing.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That was a far more serious answer than I was anticipating.
We love what we're doing, and I hope it shows.
Oh yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Well, Kim, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to sit down with us and chat about the things that you love and the things that you do and what's important to you. And talk to us about Honest Game. Like, you're doing really amazing work, groundbreaking work for some of these students that you serve. So thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
Lauren, you are amazing. Thank you for hosting me.
Absolutely. And I do, one more time, we just want to give a big old shout out to our very, very favorite sponsor. That would be FullScale. They can help you build a software team quickly and affordably. If you want to learn more, check them out at fullscale.io. Also, keep an eye out for Startup Hustle TV. We've got episodes dropping every week. Yours truly is on. Matt DeCourcy is on. Some of these amazing hosts that you know from Startup Hustle are on, and we want you to check it out. You can check it out on the Startup Hustle TV channel on YouTube. But thank you so much for listening, folks. We have enjoyed spending this time with you, and we will catch you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.